On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we get back to 19th century England and look for Christian themes in Patrick Stewart's version of A Christmas Carol. What can we learn from the ghost of Christmas present? Can we sit at his feet like we can for Jesus? On that and more in 3, 2, 1. Come on in, admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 35. I'm Michael.
And I'm Brendan.
Join us and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. We're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, their plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation and ultimately our Christian walk. You are tuned in to Finding Christ in Cinema on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Hey, we had an extra long break because of the holiday, Brendan. We got an extra 2 days.
Extra 2 days,
to
baby.
To prepare for this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema. How was Thanksgiving?
It was excellent.
Pizza and the Rose Parade. Macy's Day Street Parade.
Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, Michael.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, I do not.
Hey, it was all good for us, though.
Yeah, what else have you been doing in the past week and a half?
Oh, man, we've been getting ready for Don't Dress for Dinner.
Yeah.
We open...
Tomorrow.
Tonight.
Oh, tonight if you're listening to the podcast on time.
We open tomorrow. We open Friday the 5th.
Yes.
Today's the 4th of recording. Today...
Are you ready? Or could you use a couple more weeks?
Man, you know what? We had some interesting things happen last week. Last Wednesday, one of our actresses dropped out.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Boo! Boo!
Okay.
But, thankfully, we are tapped into the right resources, and we found an actress to replace her. And the show will go on.
The show must go on. Wow. Yes. How often has that happened in your career? More often than you'd like to think of?
I think this is the third time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dropped out.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. And especially in a week away from opening. Oh, because it actually happened last Tuesday, because last Wednesday was the first day with the new girl.
Okay.
And we had to call an extra rehearsal. So yeah, so when I got back into town from the podcast, that's what I come into.
Oh man.
Look out.
Hey, and we got to get you into town for a rehearsal tonight. So, oh, you know, last week we talked and Ron of the Red Oaks called in and wondered about Thanksgiving traditions, and we both talked about things that we like to do. And one of the things that I mentioned was that we like to, you know, go around the table and give thanks, make sure that we have develop a spirit of Thanksgiving in our hearts so that
right.
we are always giving thanks. Well, my wife brought a new tradition to the table. And I see that other people are doing it as well. A Thanksgiving tree.
Hmm.
People are making a tree and putting notes of what you're thankful for.
Huh.
And I've seen some pretty neat ones. But my wife went out and got a branch out of the yard and brought it in. You know, it's bare because we're in the heart of autumn here.
Right.
And brought it in. She handed out different colored construction paper, yellow and gold and brown, you know, for the fall colors. Gave a handful to everybody in the family. Write down what you're thankful for. And then before we ate, you know, after we prayed, she went through each one and read them aloud. And we discussed it and taped it to a branch on the tree. It was awesome.
That's pretty cool.
That was our centerpiece.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so that's a new tradition, and I'm looking forward to that every year. That's fun stuff. What else?
Oh, hey, so I'm Google famous now.
Google famous.
Yeah, you can find me at 1516 Main Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C. on Google Maps.
What?
Yeah, I know, right?
What, did they erect a statue to you?
No, they just happened to take a picture of me and my friends while we were.
How in the world did you find that?
While we were, it was during the bro trip back in August.
Okay.
We went to DC, and that particular day we were going to the Jefferson Memorial, which is, are you familiar with the National Mall layout?
I've heard of it.
Okay. Well, the National Mall is this wonderful shopping center of all. No, it's just kidding. The National Mall is a. It's just
hot
a,
topic.
It's a plot of land, basically like a huge rectangle with an offshoot called the Tidal Basin on the bottom left hand side. And on the Tidal Basin, it's this little lake. That's where the Jefferson Memorial sits, and there's a little walkway from the main mall to the memorial. Some people can paddle boat. We chose to walk. I wish we'd paddle boated. But there's a little refreshment stand, and we all stopped and got some refreshments. And that apparently is when the Google truck came by and took our
picture. Did you see the Google truck?
No. If we knew it was coming, we would have done something different.
Well, now, so.
Because we're just sitting on the benches.
How did you know that you were on Google Maps?
I didn't know until, I want to say it was, honestly, it was last night. Because I was at rehearsal and I put my phone on airplane mode during rehearsal, turned it back on and I checked Facebook, all these notifications of me being tagged into this picture.
That is crazy. I mean, how did people?
One of the guys that went on the trip with us, he researched it. Now, what that means, I have no idea.
That's crazy.
It just says he researched it. So I don't know.
Okay. Well, good.
But now, Michael, you too are also. Google Maps famous.
You too? Like Bono? And
no, you, as in you, Michael.
Wow.
Because of May 2013, you're out mowing your lawn. I don't know if you realize that or not.
No, I didn't know that.
But yeah, you're mowing your lawn. I actually found that a while back when I was first looking about how to get to your house.
Well, I want them to blur out my face. That's invading my privacy.
You can't see it. You can't tell it's
well, good.
You,
I don't want anybody to ever see me mowing the lawn.
Well, right now the whole world can.
Yes. Wow, I'm going to have to look into that. Hey, what else? Anything?
No, that covers me, man.
Okay, you ready for some real news?
Yes, I am. Roll it! The Suicide Squad is officially in the works.
You know what? Tell me more. I'm unfamiliar completely. All educate. Right. Elucidate.
Here we go. It's funny you say elucidate because that's one of the funny words in the play.
Okay.
From The Hollywood Reporter, as of this past Tuesday, the cast has been announced for Warner Brothers' production of Suicide Squad, a film based on the comic book story arc in which villains from around the DC universe join forces and wreak havoc wherever they may
be. Whoa! Run.
Yes. David Ayer, most recently noted for World War II film Fury, which was a really good movie. Check it out on the Monday Movie Review. He's writing the script and also serving as the director. Pre-production efforts will begin in February of 2015, sorry, and will last from the following mid-April to September. Now, here's the big announcement. Tom Hardy is playing the squad's leader, Rick Flagg Jr.
Whoa!
A former fighter pilot turned elite soldier. Will Smith.
Wait a second! He's playing a second DC villain.
Yes.
Wow!
Yes.
That's huge!
Yes. Will Smith, let's get back to Will Smith really quick.
Love him, go.
As soon as I get back to what I'm doing, Will Smith will play anti-hero Deadshot.
Yeah.
A hitman for hire and the world's greatest marksman. Jared Leto, and this might be the most controversial pick. Jared Leto.
What are you going to do?
Will play the Joker, a villain who needs no introduction.
Wow.
And
that's a brave man.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll talk about that in a second. And Margot Robbie will play his complicated courtesan, Harley Quinn.
Oh, the kids will be happy to have Harley Quinn in a film.
Jay Courtney will play George Digger Harkness, the Australian thug and Flash enemy Captain Boomerang. Mm. And rounding out the squad is Cara Delevingne. I hope I said that right. Or Delevingne. I don't know. Will play Enchantress, a powerful yet mentally unstable witch.
Wow.
Oh. Now, in a statement made by Warner Brothers president Greg Silverman, we look forward to seeing this terrific ensemble under Ayer's amazing guidance give new meaning to what it means to be a villain and what it means to be a hero.
Hmm.
Now, let's just have it out. Jared Leto as the Joker.
That's a brave man.
Why?
Because Heath Ledger owns that role. Heath Ledger owns the character.
He owns that role, and I agree with you there. He gave an amazing performance.
Now, is it exasperated or enhanced by the fact that he unfortunately passed on before the film was released? A lot of people say yes.
A lot of people say yes.
I think
me personally,
I think he knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah. So that is that. That's just
now. Here's my thing, though. In the comics, I have not read the comics. Let me say that up front. In the comics, though, aren't there different incarnations of the Joker?
Oh, there's. Of course there are. Of course. I mean, every writer and story arc and incarnation brings, you know, differences. So.
So why can
Point
we
well
not
taken.
Why can we not expect the same thing in cinematic adaptations of the Joker?
Well, because people that are the loudest and most boisterous on the internet are not mature enough to.
Well, here's their sign. They need to read it.
Yeah.
Suicide Squad is scheduled to detonate a theater near you. August 5th, 2016!
It's still a magic year.
It still is, but man, 2017 is bulking up behind
us. Oh, it sure is. However, how about 2015? Oh man, we got the Star Wars rundown!
La la la, la la la. La la la, la la la, la la la.
What about that teaser trailer that broke the internet? All the cats had to leave. Oh, man.
Whoa.
Well, you know the internet is made out of cats.
And recipes.
Yeah.
Yep.
That
cats and recipes.
Okay. It's busted records that were previously held for the longest time by Avengers Age of Ultron.
Right. Right.
The internet just lit up when that was released. We talked about it on the last episode. It was coming. Didn't, you know. I was glued to the net webs, as David Letterman would call them, and amongst with all other good-hearted Star Wars fans, and watch that thing. We're not going to play the audio because you've seen it before. You've seen it tons and tons of time. However, the Force Awakens trailer, friends, yeah. Mark Hamill predicted the plot in 1983. According to TheGuardian.com, over 30 years ago, Mark, the once-in-future Luke Skywalker, Hamill, predicted the plot for Star Wars The Force Awakens on a morning TV show. He said, quote, George Lucas said once, would I consider playing an Obi-Wan Kenobi-type character handing Excalibur down to the next generation? Hamill explained, quote, at the time I said, when would that be? And he said, oh, around 2011. Oh, and what about that Excalibur reference?
Oh.
See, this video has been on YouTube and the internet for a long, long time.
True.
Of him, you know, on this show. But that really, because that sword, that lightsaber in the teaser trailer is a big old broadsword of a lightsaber.
Yes.
Oh, man.
And the subject of plenty of arguments.
Ah, who cares what they have to say? Goosebumps everywhere. It was epic. Epic. Moving along from StarWarsUnderworld.com, John Boyega weighs in via Instagram. After seeing the 22-year-old actor for mere seconds in the opening shot of the teaser that broke the interwebs with a Z, the stormtrooper armor-wearing glimpse drew both positive and negative comments from fans.
From, quote, fans.
Yes, I always put Star Wars fans in quotes because, of course, if you discount the prequels, you are no Star Wars fan. There, I said it.
Oh.
Boyega responded on Instagram, thank you, quote, thank you for all the love and support. The fan mail and fan art has added to my joy. Isn't it crazy that Star Wars is actually happening? I'm in the movie, but as a Star Wars fan, I am very excited. A year is a long time, but it will be worth the wait. And then he ends with, to whom it may concern, get used to it. Smiley face.
I don't want to tell you.
Well, Brendan, people are complaining, what's this African-American guy doing in Stormtrooper uniform?
He's supposed to be a clone
of Jango Fett.
Jango Fett.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, what people don't understand, and this has been rehashed and rehashed and all that stuff, those clones that were made on Kamino, those guys all died out.
Exactly.
Okay, they had accelerated growth built into them so that they could get them out and on the battlefield real quick. And that accelerated growth meant an accelerated death. If you live to be a ripe old age of however many months. You know. Only Jango Fett, Boba Fett was unaltered. Because Jango said, I want one clone that's unaltered. And that's Boba.
Yeah.
And he raised him as his son. Mm-hmm. Right? We talked all about that on some episode of Finding Christ in Cinema.
Way back when.
So by the time of A New Hope, you know, Star Wars episode four.
See, I knew that.
Yes. Hey, I'm old. Those clones, they're just guys. They're soldiers. So anyway.
Hey, you guys.
Yeah. So, but anyway, to whom it may concern, get used to it. Moving on, EmpireOnline.com confirmed Andy Serkis voiced the Star Wars teaser. Or did he? I even got into conversation over this. Who was that voice that people are saying? Benedict Cumberbatch. I was thinking Adam Driver because we think that he's playing the main bad guy, the main Sith or whatever, but nobody knows. We don't know.
Not even IMDb knows. And trust me, we looked.
Wow. However, Andy Serkis paid, FCC's very own Andy Serkis paid a visit to the folks at Absolute Radio to confirm that it is his voice. Speculation had been that it was FCC's very own Smaug the Golden, Benedict Cumberbatch. Quote, I'm sure Benedict doesn't need any more attention at the moment, said Serkis. You know, Benedict, he's the guy who owns entertainment right now.
Yes. It's wrapped around his little finger.
But Brendan, in this article, and everybody go to this link, where's the confirmation? It says that he went to confirm. I don't see him. I didn't see the quote of him actually confirming.
Well, maybe it's not in a quote. Maybe it's just when they say he went to confirm, simply the action of he went to do that is the confirmation.
Well,
Michael, I think you're making mountains out of molehills.
I love to do that. That's what we do here. That's what podcasting is for.
You're making You're making Naboos out of Tatooines.
Last thing from SlashFilm.com. Another Star Wars The Force Awakens trailer in front of Avengers Age of Ultron.
Would you have it any other way?
Oh. Avengers Age of Ultron comes to U.S. theaters in May 1st, and Star Wars Episode 7 follows 8 months later.
Oh, man. That's quite the Star Wars
rundown. I don't
want
to talk about any other movie from now until Star Wars comes out.
We're still doing the show, right?
This is now Finding Christ in Star Wars.
Oh, darn it. I knew that would happen eventually. Will Ferrell takes on Will Shakespeare.
Where is Scooby-Doo? Why don't I have that clip yet?
Exactly. Cinema Blend follows up on Variety's exclusive reporting of Will Ferrell currently being sought out for Sony Pictures-produced Shakespearean film. But hold your horses. Will Ferrell will not be hunching over to play Richard III, leading the English army in the Battle of Agincourt as Henry V, nor will he even be wooing the fairy queen Titania as the donkey-headed bottom. In fact, this production won't even be based on a singular Shakespearean play. Instead, the film will follow a Shakespearean theater company as they strive to bring the bard justice where all other productions have failed.
Okay.
Now, it's a highly conceptual concept, but not necessarily novel, as it has been done before by a short-lived Canadian television series entitled Slings and Arrows. And what's that from, Michael?
Shakespeare.
What play? Who said it? Title character.
I can't.
Who said it?
Hamlet.
Hamlet. Did you just guess?
Yeah, title character.
Well, there's plenty of title characters.
Name another one.
Macbeth, Romeo and Juliet.
Ah, Okay. Romeo and Juliet is two.
Whatever.
Go.
Give me that mulligan. I gotta redo it.
Okay.
It's a highly conceptual concept, but not necessarily novel, as it has been done before by a short-lived Canadian television series entitled Slings and Arrows, whose only font was being too esoteric for general audiences. But, as America knows, Will Ferrell is not esoteric, which is why Sony's project has potential. More on this story as it develops.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah, I can see this. And I will be, if it's family friendly, I will be all over it.
That's the key phrase right there. Yeah. Family friendly. because I'm gonna be honest with you, Michael, sometimes backstage theater is not family friendly.
Well, I mean, it's all locker room
exactly. But you wouldn't bring your family into the locker room.
Before we move on, I'm hoping that there's not a whole lot of feedback on the show up to now, because I had the studio monitors open going in through the microphones here. If you heard any feedback, because I won't know yet until after the fact. Oh. That's what that was. But hey, now it's time for a quick rundown of the articles posted on the Finding Christ in Cinema Facebook page this past week. Past week at facebook.com/Christ in Cinema.
The Crow remake to be directed by Corin Hardy.
Oh, boy. And if you something that gets people even hotter than African-Americans in Stormtrooper suits. And broadswords.
I don't even want to talk about it.
Broad sabers.
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
Personally, I wasn't a fan of The Crow, not because I didn't like it, just because I wasn't introduced to it. Moving on, Guardians of the Galaxy and Star Wars.
What is this?
In the same trailer?
What?
Michael, you just got to watch it. Oh. They took the visuals from the Guardians of the Galaxy, they clipped them up, and then set it to the audio of the Star Wars trailer.
Okay, well, I will be sure to get over to our Facebook page there.
It's just so worth it.
Awesome.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington on Blu-ray this week.
I got to get watching those Planet of the Apes movies.
Yeah. Well, and hey, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Can't beat Jimmy Stewart. Moving on. Oh, that was repeated.
Hey, it was a good story.
It was. A special article from Cinema Blend, Why the James Bond Franchise Isn't Goofy Anymore. It's a nice little write-up, and we'll talk about it later on with some certain breaking
news. Because I don't
like
that headline.
Why it's not goofy anymore?
Yeah. That seems to infer that it always has been goofy.
Well, I mean,
Sean Connery is James Bond.
We're not talking about the Bond. I'm specifically, when I think goofy James Bond, I think Jaws. And I hate to say that because...
Oh, well, see, that's Roger Moore. And that's not okay. Sean Connery.
Okay.
Okay.
Marvel Universe's Black Panther speaks. And that's talking about Chadwick Boseman.
Yes.
Let's see. Oh, Chinese university student creates his own Marvel Avengers suits.
I ordered two.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
One for me, one for you of each.
Oh, sweet.
We can cosplay on Finding Christ in Cinema.
It's a podcast. Star Wars trailer beats Avengers trailer. You already talked about that. Let's see. Oh, new Terminator teaser trailer for tomorrow's full-length trailer. How are you going to tease a trailer? Okay, I don't get it. Okay, whatever.
Whatevs.
All right. Let's see. There's The Crow again. Will Ferrell Shakespeare. Don't talk about that. FCC's own Andy Serkis. Suicide Squad. What we're doing this week. Oh, Hobbiton goes to London.
Yeah.
I did watch that video. That was pretty cool.
That was neato.
That's really cool.
They took the set, part of the set, over to for the premiere or something over there in London. And, man, I wish they'd bring it to Middle Tennessee.
Hey, that'd be nice. Did you know?
No.
Anybody that would be interested in a Frozen sequel?
Well, yeah, all my kids.
We didn't think so. Oh, and to follow that up, not only will Frozen get a movie sequel, but it will also be added to the roster of Disney Broadway plays.
Okay.
And Michael, you linked to firstshowing.net, and then I linked to the Telegraph interview, which is a really interesting interview if you want to read it, from Idina Menzel. She, of course, voices Elsa. Let's see. Oh, look, the Star Wars Lego trailer. That was pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, that was sent from Fletch over at Homeschooling in Real Life. That's where I got that link from.
Oh, I meant to do a write up on this one. The Hillsong movie.
Yeah.
The trailer.
What is that? Is that a documentary?
I don't know. It's looking like it's going to be a documentary.
Okay, because I've been reading about that for a while. We just haven't reported on it.
Yeah, we need to look into that.
Yes.
More Steve Jobs biopic news. Enter Padme.
Yeah.
Natalie Portman, she'll be going in. What did the Punisher do to the Fantastic Four?
Ooh, that's a big story there. There's a big war going on between Marvel and Fox, because I guess Fox owns the rights to Fantastic Four movies. And so Marvel is saying, hey, we're killing off Fantastic Four then.
Mm.
Whoa. So everybody, find out more about that and all these articles that we post on the Finding Christ in Cinema Facebook page. Just like us. Be our friend over there at facebook.com/Christ in Cinema. Brendan, are you ready to go to the movies?
Man, I'm so ready.
Oh, here we go.
Damn you, Merry Christmas.
Ebenezer!
You will be haunted by three spirits.
I am the ghost of Christmas present.
Show me no more.
Why do you delight in torturing me?
Will Tiny Tim live?
Patrick Stewart and Hallmark Entertainment bring you the most spectacular telling of A Christmas Carol.
Can you forgive a stupid old man?
Reawaken the spirit of Christmas. A Christmas Carol. Look for it on video cassette and DVD.
God bless us, everyone.
A classic story. Well, of course, to say that is an understatement.
Yes.
A gross understatement.
Yeah.
When's the first time you saw this version?
This version, seeing it all the way through, was this past week.
Oh, really?
Yes, because for some reason, just throughout the years, I would always catch it. For some unknown reason to me, I would always catch it right when the ghost of Christmas yet to come is pointing to Scrooge's grave. I would always catch this version at that moment. I don't know why. It's just, and then, you know, he would fall through like he does. And then I'd be like, oh, well, that's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to not watch it until I can watch all of it.
Well, see, the thing is that every time that I've brought up this version, Brendan, you got the look on your face like, why that version? Why that one?
Yeah.
You know, there's so many.
Just because I had never invested in it.
Well, after fulfilling your assignment, your assigned duties for the show here at Finding Christ in Cinema, what do you think?
Wow. I love Patrick Stewart. As a performer,
oh man,
I love his voice. I love
that.
His facial expressions, yes. The way he carries himself as Scrooge,
yeah.
Oh man,
yes. Becoming the character, and he loves this story so much that he's famous for his one man production.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah,
I would love to see that.
Me too.
Now. Compared to other versions, what kind of... Because each version is an interpretation of the story, right?
True.
I mean, we even have the Muppet Christmas Carol on the list because, of course, FCC's very own Michael Caine starts as Scrooge.
That's right. When you talk about Michael Caine...
Cockney accent and everything.
When you talk about Michael Caine, it's like you're stepping down a ladder.
The story is so beloved, and it's so easy to pull Christian themes out of it.
Right.
That you really almost forget that primarily what kind of a story is A Christmas Carol?
To me, honestly, yeah. If I were to when you say what kind of story, I would say it's almost a parable.
Oh, okay.
Of course, now, if you're referring to our discussion before the mics, of course, it's laden with social commentary. And honestly, the parables were kind of like that.
Okay, so it is a story that is intended, A Christmas Carol especially, is intended to elicit a reaction.
Yeah.
And even more than that, is to intended to elicit a change of mind.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
I guess, yeah.
So much so that it it begs you to act.
Now, a parable is a story that is traditionally has been defined as a story that is going to convey universal truth in common language.
Right.
Now, I think that both of us, the way that we approach this story, then I would say, yeah, we could see that as a parable because we're seeing universal truth in this.
We could.
Right.
But then again, some people might call it a bunch of...
Well, what would happen really is if we sat down without any background, like what we're going to lay in the show, the first thing that most people would say is...
What a bunch of hippy-dippy baloney.
Speaking of Will Ferrell, he joins us in the studio FCC, today.
And now, welcome, Will Ferrell, because now you are FCC's very own Will Ferrell.
yes, you are. Oh, man.
You joined the club. So now... the way that the story is laid out and the strings that it tugs on, yes, social commentary throughout, but it is also interwoven with great spaces of just beautiful storytelling.
Right.
What kind of man was Dickens that would influence? I mean, most if you really think about it, most of his stories are social commentaries. You know, there's a lot about child labor and, you know.
Well, I was going to go into Great Expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least from what I remember.
Yep. You know? What kind of a man was he that, I mean, I'm looking at this saying, this is a Christian story through and through. What do you think?
Well, I would first be inclined to consider Dickens' own faith.
Yeah.
And what he and how well, not what but how he perceived the message of the Gospels. And to be honest, he didn't necessarily see the same Christ that we do. His parents were Anglican.
British, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
the
of course.
C of E.
Yes, yeah, the Church of England, yeah. But they themselves didn't even necessarily...
They're nominally.
Yeah, exactly. They were only by name.
Yeah.
Dickens himself, and this information, by the way, is available at the University of California Santa Cruz website. They have a little something they call the Dickens Project.
And just keep in mind, University of Santa Cruz is an incredibly liberal school. Very. That's where the hippies go.
Right.
And that's where you go there if you really want to be immersed in...
What a bunch of hippy-dippy baloney.
So keep that in mind as we're interpreting the life of this man.
But he himself, he identified more with a Unitarian belief.
Ah, just like at the end of Lost.
See, I haven't seen Lost, Michael.
Oh, my goodness.
No!
I thought you liked story. Just Whoa. Adding it to the list.
Whoa, okay. Yeah.
You know what? You are forging your chain on this show.
You know what?
What?
I would like to go to Twitter really quick and Saruman 2.0.
Yes. You know? Okay. He did rebuke me.
Yes, he did. And I would just like to read. Excuse me, my voice cracked.
He's emotional.
I would just like to read what was said on Twitter. And if you don't follow us on Twitter, you need to. You can follow Michael at MichaelGCTN, or you can follow me at Levi the Believer. Now, our good friend Saruman 2.0 says, Michael, regarding Brendan's Star Wars and Lord of the Rings problem, we need to love him as he is and practice forgiveness.
It's a madhouse!
Well said. He was saying that to make you feel... Okay, I repent. I repent.
I'm just saying to make me feel better. Anyway, back to Dickens. Let's see. I wanted to make sure I pulled up how the Santa Cruz page puts it.
Yeah, his Unitarian beliefs.
Yeah, he... Let's see. Oh, he revered Christ as a model, a teacher, and a healer. Most importantly, a comforter of the distressed. Which we can see that.
Yeah.
We can see that heavily throughout in A Christmas Carol.
And I can see it in the Bible.
Well, yeah. Well, obviously, yeah. However, he did not necessarily see him as the savior of mankind through the crucifixion and resurrection.
Yes, kids, yes, but...
However, that does not mean that we can't use A Christmas Carol as a platform from which to proclaim the gospel.
Oh, you absolutely can.
Because, yes, we can. We talked about it. Hopefully we can hone in on everything.
Well, this is going to be a little bit different. This is going to be much more of a conversation. We'll just work our way, you know, cursorily, if that's a word, through the story and pull out some gems.
Like a pleasant Sunday drive.
Let's go for a walk in the garden in the cool of the day.
Hey, come. Follow me.
Exactly.
Come forth.
Well, do you want to say anything else about the cast or anything before we move on? Because I thought that every person in this version knocked it out of the park. Bob Cratchit, everybody.
I was about to say, the guy that played Bob Cratchit.
Richard E. Grant.
Grant, yes.
Yes.
I think he did exceptionally well.
And his wife.
Considering the other Cratchits. The whole Cratchit family, really.
Yes.
Except for Martha.
I am very much enamored and bowled over by the performance of Dominic West as Fred, Scrooge's grandson.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit more about his character in this. The way that he was portrayed was absolutely spot on.
Oh, Joel Grey. As the Ghost of Christmas Past.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh.
Now, Joel Grey, that's another stage actor.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously.
Yes. Okay, I'm glad you could tell.
And so touching when he's wanting Scrooge to go with him, you know, and Scrooge says, I'm immortal, I'm going to fall. And he says, not if I touch you here. And where does he touch him?
On his heart.
On the heart.
Oh, stop.
Oh,
stop, man.
You know, we're not going to get into that, I don't think. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. I love, absolutely love Ian McNeice or Nice as Fezziwig.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes, man.
Yes.
No. You know, Mrs. Fezziwig, I don't want to sing tonight. Oh, come on, Mr. Fezziwig.
Okay. If you say so.
And his wife, too, as Mrs. Fezziwig. I love that couple.
Yes.
I want to be there. This is one of those stories that I want to step through that screen and become part of it. So well cast. Yeah, I mentioned the lady who played Mrs. Cratchit, Saskia Reeves. What about Bernard Lloyd as Marley's ghost? Do you think Statler and Waldorf did better?
I mean, I'm always down for some Statler and Waldorf.
We're Marley and Marley.
Oh. No. Okay. He didn't give my favorite performance. I couldn't tell you right now who did because I just know that's not it.
Okay.
And I'm not going to say that Jason Alexander's performance as Jacob Marley is the best either.
But you're also going to say that Desmond Barrett as the Ghost of Christmas Present wasn't a favorite of yours.
Still not my favorite.
Now, who was yours?
Let me IMDb him.
Okay. I really love the portrayal in the Muppet Christmas Carol. You know, and seriously, next year, let's do a Muppet Christmas Carol.
Hey, if you say so. If you say so.
I love that, you know, especially with Michael Caine in it. But here's what I love about Desmond Barrett's portrayal of the Ghost of Christmas Present, and that is his occasional... sharp indignation towards Scrooge in the way that he speaks to Scrooge. You know, he'll be taking him through and then really hammer him.
Well, now, I think that was actually Dickens' idea for the Christmas present, which we'll get to. We will get to that. My favorite Ghost of Christmas Present is actually in the Albert Finney version. Scrooge from 1970, and he was played by Kenneth Moore.
Okay,
I think he really brings it.
Now, before, you know, earlier today, sent out a message letting people know that we were going to be talking about this version of A Christmas Carol today, and asked if anybody had anything that they wanted to add to it, and FCC's very own John Carney of Shelbyville Times-Gazette weighed in.
Editor extraordinaire.
Yes, he said, my favorite version by far is the one with George C. Scott as Scrooge. Now, I was telling you, Brendan, that, you know, that's 1984. So, you know, I was 14 years old. I wasn't, I saw it, but at that time, I'm, the story's too boring for me. Come on, let's get, you know, I need some Star Wars action. Where's the lightsabers, you know, or where's a, you know, I need a broadsword or something
going on.
But I have seen it, but now I definitely need to watch that again, and hopefully I will this Christmas season. And he continues, David Warner as Cratchit and Edward Woodward as the Ghost of Christmas Present. Goes on, I actually prefer Alastair Sim as Scrooge if you isolate just the performance. But
amen.
Okay.
Well, ooh, actually, I would have to meditate heavily on whether I like Patrick Stewart or Alastair Sim.
Okay.
I do like Alastair Sim. His performance, have you seen that one?
I don't know.
Well, it was originally, I've seen so many. It was originally black and white, but we actually have the colorized version.
Okay, I know I know what you're talking about. Yeah, okay, yeah. And then he says, but the Scott version is better overall. Beautiful, well cast all around, and faithful to Dickens in tone and content. What do you feel about that?
I would have to rewatch the Scott version.
Okay,
because one thing I did notice in this version, the language was very close to Dickens' own language, especially even in the opening dead as a doornail speech. He's like, you know, what's dead about a doornail? In fact, it's the most dead piece of iron.
What a great
ever.
Place to start right there, because that's what I didn't clip anything from this. But what does Scrooge say? You know, well, at least he's in a better place. No, he's dead. He's dead. Scrooge is an agnostic at best, an atheist at worst.
Woo-hoo.
Okay, doesn't believe that there's anything. You're dead as a doornail. That's he, you know, he has ceased to exist. That says a lot about Scrooge and where he is in his life. And so, Brendan, let's just start having a conversation. Let's just start right there. You know, why? What is it about Scrooge? You know what we ought to get out of the way. What is Scrooge's favorite saying, especially in the first, you know, third of the movie?
Huh. Bah, humbug.
Humbug, Christmas, humbug. You know, his friend, his nephew, George, Fred comes in. And
Fred and George Weasley, huh?
Well, hey, you know, always got to get back to, you know, I just love magic.
There's no
what?
Such thing as
magic. Get him out of here.
That guy, he monitors everything we say. Bah humbug. You know, Christmas is a humbug. We don't use that word in modern vernacular. In fact, Brendan, I would think that many people, if you ask them, what does that mean? What does humbug mean? You know, it's just a nonsensical word. It's like, what about, you know, bah.
What a bunch of hippie.
Well, yeah, hippie. They. I mean, that is basically what you know, what they would be saying if they
what
had
a bunch
whoa.
Of hippie dippy baloney.
It's just nonsense, but that's not what it means. Okay, so, and I got this idea to research this from a comment on IMDb when I was looking through the trivia and whatnot, and somebody wanted to point out humbug and what Scrooge is actually saying when he says humbug. And according to Wikipedia, a humbug is a person or object that behaves in a deceptive or dishonest way, often as a hoax or in jest. So what is he saying to his nephew, Fred?
Oh, he's calling him a fake.
Yeah.
He's calling him a fraud.
You're pretending. He's saying, at least, Fred, at least I am honest. And I am the same today as I was yesterday and as I will be tomorrow.
He's saying, I'm not putting on a
pretense.
Pretense. We haven't even mentioned that word in so long.
A favorite word of FCC.
He's not being pretentious about the holiday. He's not going to set aside this one day to be nice.
Yeah.
He's just going to be mean and miserly all year round.
And so going on, when referring to a pres... sorry. Let me have a... I need a new prescription here. When referring to a person, a humbug means a fraud or imposter, implying an element of unjustified publicity and spectacle. Wow! In modern usage, the word is most associated with Ebenezer Scrooge, a character creator, you know, blah, 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 of course. What was that?
Sorry, that John sent me a link and I tried to listen to the sound of it. Sorry.
So when he's saying that, he is declaring Christmas to be a fraud. Wow.
Ooh.
Christmas itself
Ooh.
Is a fraud.
Ooh.
And it makes people do things and act in ways that are not
that
natural.
That are contrary to nature.
Yeah. So anyway, that's where he's coming from. And he has no belief in the afterlife. He has no belief in Christmas. He has no belief in the goodness of man. But he's been influenced by the things in his life that take him to that. I'm thinking, let's talk about the ghost of Christmas past.
Ooh.
You know, what did we learn about Scrooge's childhood at that school?
Oh, man. Well, first we realized that he did not want to go home because his dad hated him pretty much.
And his dad didn't want him home.
Yeah.
Mother died. So his mom dies, a huge event in his life. His dad doesn't like him anymore.
Revelation.
Oh.
Revelation.
Yeah.
Okay, so Scrooge's mom died. Dad cuts him off. Fran died. George cuts Fred off.
Oh.
Oh, man. Now I'm getting... Where's my tearjerker?
your tear catcher.
Oh, man.
And so he has that on him. And then as he gets older, then he... When he's working for Mr. Fezziwig, you know, his heart has already started to change because of the way that his dad treated him. Hey, life is hard, right? And then they're watching this dance at you know, Fezziwig's, and the lady, you know, his lady friend comes in, and oh, how touching and tender. That was such a beautiful, beautiful scene. In fact, I do have a clip from that. This is a perfect time to do this because now he's sitting there and watching his younger self dance with the young lady and love, and he knows what he has lost. And so, you know, obviously, this great setting, this party that Fezziwig sets up, the ghost of Christmas present is wants to ask him about what he's seeing. What, you know, I don't know, says Scrooge, maybe, you know, I'm remembering it through rose-colored glasses, basic, you know, really.
Wait, did you say the ghost of Christmas?
Past. Okay. Well, let's listen to this clip.
Fezziwig once said to me, Ebenezer, when happiness shows up, always give it a comfortable seat.
Oh, what wisdom is that?
Yeah.
When happiness shows up, give it a comfortable seat. Give it the place at the front of the table, at the head of the table. Here you go. You'll make yourself comfortable.
True. Giving people pleasure is such a small matter.
Oh!
Yep.
That's going to be a big theme in this episode.
Yep.
And how well said. Giving people pleasure is such a small matter. In fact, how small is it, Ghost of Christmas Past?
He only spent a few pounds. 3 or 4 at best. Is it?
He's talking about Fezziwig.
Right.
To do this for you only cost you pittance, basically, for him.
Right. So much that he deserves praise for it.
You don't understand, Spirit. He had the power to make us happy or unhappy, to make our work heavy or light.
What's the matter?
Nothing. Looking back, perhaps things seemed better than they really were.
All this was a lie, then.
The world changes. You can't trust anything. But no. It was just like this, right down to the last mince pie and dance.
Things change. Yes, this was all real. This is exactly what it was. But things change. And he changed. And later on, and then, you know, his betrothed, his beloved says, you know what, you aren't the man that that I fell in love with, and your heart is elsewhere. Your heart is on riches and you know, things that you can control, and I release you. And
it's like what he says with the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come when he goes to the stock market.
Yes.
Here, profit is worshipped.
Yes.
Profit is everything. And that's how Scrooge has changed his
heart. His life.
Yeah.
Why? Because he has been changed. You just said it. He changed his heart. I want to get to Jacob Marley real quick, because once we talk, Marley dies. They say he's in a better place. Scrooge says, no, he's just dead as a doornail. He's got nothing. You know, profit is king. This is all that we're here for. I'm going to get what I can. Don't lie to me. Don't be a humbug.
Right.
No pretense. No pretending. Let's just be real with each other. That's what I'm doing. At least I'm courteous enough to be who I am with you at all times. And then he meets with the ghost of Marley, and the conversation, what are you doing here? Why do spirits walk the earth? What are you doing talking to me? And I've come to warn you. What is it? Why are you fettered? Why do you have all these chains and these weights connected to you? These are the links.
What?
These are the chains that I
forged in life.
Link by link.
Yes.
Yard by yard.
Oh, come on. What are you talking about? You know, and he goes on to, I don't want to hear this. In fact,
Jacob Marley, speak comfort to me, Jacob.
I have none to give. I cannot rest. I cannot stay. I cannot linger anywhere. Oh, never to be able to make amends for missed opportunities. Oh, the torture of remorse.
Jacob, I don't understand why you're suffering all your life. You were a good businessman.
That's why I'm suffering. The suffering I caused others is being repaid.
Jacob, it was business.
Business? Mankind was my business. The common good was my business. At this time of the rolling year, I suffer most.
I can't do anything about it. And Scrooge, have you ever in your short life? I know you're at your like quarter life crisis or whatever. Okay,
yeah,
I respect that.
Yeah.
Okay, I honor you for that and all that good stuff.
Whatever.
But anyway,
what else?
Have you ever heard anybody be called out on something and then their response is going, "It's just business. That's business." Have you ever witnessed that?
Yeah.
I have too.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And that is startling when somebody right. does that because they mean it.
Yeah.
They're not lying.
Exactly.
They're not being a humbug. No. It's just business. Okay, so our interactions outside of the workplace or whatever, okay, well, then we have to treat each other nicely. But now we're in the office, it's business.
Ooh.
And business is king. And that is offered up as a valid excuse.
Right.
Not even an excuse.
Right.
That's really saying, well, stop right there. What are you talking about? This is business. And that's what he's saying to Marley. Mankind is my business, or was my business, mm-hmm. and I don't have that opportunity anymore. In fact, come over here with me and look out this window.
Oh.
Oh, boy. What do they see? What's the vision that they see looking out that window?
All these ghosts.
The spirits all fettered.
Oh, man.
And then here comes one floating down to, you know, a lady on the street with her child, and he's reaching out, but he can't do anything. So why? Why can't he do anything?
These spirits try to interfere for good in human affairs. But they've lost the power forever. That is the curse we bear.
Wow. Lost the ability to do the things that should have been done. Mankind is our business. This gets into the social justice message of Dickens.
Right.
And so well portrayed. Any thoughts on that?
No. Well, we'll continue the social justice.
Okay.
Well,
yes.
We'll get more into
that. We're going to hit that hard because after this, then of course the Ghost of Christmas Past, which we just talked about, beautiful sequence. But then when he goes back and he's back in his bedchamber and then he hears something and gets up out and walks down the hallway and sees a light under the door of another room and opens that door And who does he meet?
Come in and know me better, man. Have you never seen anything like this before?
Not in this house.
I am the ghost of Christmas Present.
That's quite a figure.
Ooh, yeah.
Quite a figure. And this, to me, is the pivotal point. This whole act, the whole sequence with Christmas Present, I'm going to submit to you, Brendan, that this is a picture of Christ in this story.
How funny, Michael, that we seem to agree.
What? Okay, let's talk about... In fact, actually, I see Christ in each of the three spirits, or at least I see God. To see Jesus as the manifest of the Messiah, the anointed one that came to draw everyone unto him. I see the ghost of Christmas past almost as the spirit of the law. He's really just pointing out, this is what happened. Boom, 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 boom.
Yep.
And now I'm going to take you and show you this. This is what you did. Mm-hmm. It's what you did. And guess what? You're paying the consequences now.
Aren't you?
And that's law, right?
Yeah.
Cause and effect and law and consequence. And then the ghost of Christmas present as the Jesus that we know.
Yeah.
And that is revealed to us in the New Testament. And then I see the ghost of Christmas future as the Spirit showing us things, revealing things to us. And in Scrooge's case, the Spirit is just revealing, this is the road you're on. Here's the road you're on, and here's where it leads.
This is it.
Here's the parking spot right here at the end of that road.
Right.
So can you see that?
I can, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what makes you think right off the bat, because for me, just the opening lines, come in and know me better, man.
Exactly. It's Jesus' own invitation for us to, hey, look, follow me.
Yeah. This is the part where when you are watching this, because you're all going to watch this version here within this month with all of your friends, and when you are sitting on your
double-decker couch
in watching Patrick Stewart's version of A Christmas Carol, here's your key verse right here when you come to the Ghost of Christmas Present. Come in and know me better, man. And this is going to sum up the rest of our talk for on my behalf. Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 through 30 out of the New Living Translation. Come to me, all you who are weary and carry heavy burdens. That's Scrooge. That's Ebenezer Scrooge. Come in and know me better, man. Come to me. Come in to me. Ebenezer Scrooge, you who are weary and carry heavy burdens.
Those chains you forged in life.
Yeah, because you got them and they're longer than Marley's. He already told you. These were how long mine were 7 years ago.
Right.
You've just kept on forging.
Yep.
Kept on forging. I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, Ebenezer. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your soul. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light. We're going to find out the burden right now. What is the burden? Here's another little thing. That I love this little clip. So he says, hey, come on. Here's Scrooge. Oh, brother.
Spirit, take me where you wish. I'd like to get this over and done with. Touch my robe.
Touch my robe. You know what? Why did I think of the lady that had the issue of blood following after Christ and saying, if I just reach out and grab his robe, I'll be healed. This is almost like, Jesus saying, hey, you do that now, Ebenezer, and you're going to be healed. I'm going to heal you right now and show you things that you need to see. Takes them out on the street. And they are walking amongst the people, and the spirit of Christmas present is sprinkling this water on people. And Ebenezer, I have an idea of what that is.
Why do you sprinkle water on the food? Is there a blessing in it?
There is. My own.
And would that apply to any meal on this day?
Well, to any kindly given. To a poor one, most of all.
Why to a poor one, most of all?
Because it needs it most.
Oh.
Comments?
No, I'm tracking with you, buddy. Oh, and yeah, well, actually, that water that he's sprinkling, it has a name in the book. The Milk of Human Kindness.
Oh.
And
why would we be on this show, Brendan? Let's discuss this right now. Why are we so bent on all this?
What a bunch of hippy dippy baloney.
Brendan, we are Americans. We got manifest destiny. We got American pragmatism. Okay?
Pull yourself up by the bootstraps, son.
We know that the Bible says if a man doesn't work, neither let him eat. These people, they have no one to blame but themselves. Could it be because that goes against everything that Jesus taught?
Well, it's funny you bring that point up because that's where I want to talk about. Let's cue up that little first scene back before Jacob shows up. Let's cue that sound up with the two charity collectors.
Oh, okay. Here, hold on just a second because I opened up another window that got in my way, and I will do this, and here we go.
At this festive time of the year, it is surely desirable that we make some slight provision for the poor and destitute. Don't you agree?
I take it that you gentlemen are new to the district.
New and eager, sir. You will agree, I'm sure, that many thousands of people lack the basic necessities.
Sorry.
Okay, so queso. I love cheese.
Yes.
Yes. Here, this is before Scrooge has his visitation by Marley's ghost. And honestly, where's old David Gaddy with his film student analysis? Let's actually look at three specific instances that Scrooge has even before Marley's ghost. We have Fred, we have the two collectors, and we have the young boy who comes up caroling at his door.
David is going to be so proud of you.
Now, not only is the number three found in this series, in this little instance, but it's also found in how many spirits are there?
Three
spirits.
Ding, 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 ding,
yes.
Ding, ding.
Yes, and in fact, each of these instances before Marley's visitation are represented in the same manner. The past is represented by Fred. The present is represented by the two charity collectors. And the future is represented by the caroling boy. Uh-oh. But I want to focus on the two collectors. As we've just heard in this little scene, they, of course, are new to the area. They're new to the district. And they don't necessarily know how mean and miserly Mr. Scrooge is. If they did, they wouldn't have asked him in the first place. But yet, here they are.
Yeah.
And they
they're good-hearted guys. Why would they think?
Exactly. Their concern is for the destitute.
Yeah.
And the impoverished. That's their concern. They don't care who they have to ask for money or for contributions. And Scrooge, well,
many hundreds of thousands lack ordinary comforts.
Are there no prisons?
Plenty of prisons, sir.
And the union workhouses, are they still in operation?
Yes, they are. I only wish I could say they were not.
You see, Scrooge knows that there are other institutions to take care of the poor and the impoverished. There are prisons. There are the union workhouses. And let's keep on. We'll play a little bit more.
A few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth.
How much may we put you down for, Mr. Scrooge?
Nothing.
You wish to remain anonymous?
I wish to be left alone.
I wish to be left alone. That is Scrooge's attitude throughout the whole year.
Yeah.
He wishes to be left alone. Why? So he can do his business. So he can continue punching pennies or pinching pennies. There's a typo in my brain thing.
He wants to punch Cratchit.
He does.
Right, yeah. Now he'd like to punch these two guys.
Yeah, get him out of his store.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how dare you ask me for this,
yeah,
for this support?
Yep.
And then
you guys are disingenuous anyway.
Yeah. I can't remember if he calls them humbug to their faces.
Yeah.
But he's thinking it, and you know he is.
Yeah.
Let's listen to why he doesn't support these institutions.
I don't make merry myself at Christmas time, and I can't afford to make idle people merry.
Oh, these people are idle.
Yeah.
These people aren't working.
If a man won't work, neither let him eat.
There you go. That's that attitude, and unfortunately, it's the same attitude that in America. Anyway, what am I talking about? I don't know.
Manifest Destiny and American Pragmatism.
Now, Michael.
Okay, sorry. Michael. Hey, now you're slipping right into, you know, I can't even say it right now.
Well, okay. Well, hey. No, well, actually, let's go ahead and play to the end of it.
Okay.
I support those institutions I have mentioned, and I expect the poor to make use of them. Those who are badly off must go there.
Many cannot go there, and many would rather die.
If they'd rather die, they'd better do it and decrease the surplus population.
Ho, ho, ho.
Hmm.
Yeah, if many would rather die, they'd better do it and...
Do it quickly.
And get out of my books.
Yeah.
Because get out of my business, because I have no concern for them. And he even says, look, I already support these institutions. I expect the poor to go to them if they want my help, because that's where I'm putting my help,
yeah,
in these man-made institutions that are away from me, that have nothing to do with me except for the fact that I support them with my money that I have earned by
the sweat of my brow,
by my own works.
Yeah.
Oh man. Okay. Now, you say you see the spirit of Christmas present as a picture of Jesus?
Yes, I do.
I do too, specifically in that he later convicts Scrooge with his own words. And doesn't Jesus have that tendency?
Yes.
Let's listen to the next scene, to the very end, just to help you guys know where we are. The very end of the Ghost of Christmas Present's time with Scrooge. Scrooge sees that the spirit is getting older, and there's something odd and misshapen coming out of his robe.
Spirit, forgive me, but I see something strange and not belonging to you there beneath your robe. Is it a foot or a claw?
It might be a claw for all the flesh that is on it.
It might be a claw for all the flesh that is on it.
It's emaciated.
It's bony.
Yeah. It's in want.
Yes. Ooh, well... More on that.
Oh.
Yeah, just go right ahead.
Look. Look here.
Spirit, are they yours?
No, they are man's. This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware of both of them, but most of all beware the boy. For on his forehead I see that written which is doom. Unless the writing is erased.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Hey, for more of writing on the forehead and on the thigh and everything like that, go back to Finding Christ in Cinema, the episode where we talked about Toy Story.
Yeah.
The significance about I've seen the writing on his forehead written doom. Because what is it? What did we talk about? What did we talk about in that episode? When you have a name written on somebody, it means
that somebody is owned by that name.
It's ownership.
Yeah.
Doom is the owner of that boy.
Ooh.
Wow.
Man. And not only is he the owner, but that's what will happen. Which honestly, that's why this scene is a perfect segue into the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. But we'll pull that back in. Let's finish out the scene.
If you deny him, slander those who tell others about him, admit he exists but do nothing about it, then doom will engulf you all.
Are there no shelters? No charities to help them? Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses?
Oh, man.
man. And this is where
tell me that is not phenomenal acting.
Yeah, well, hold on. We're past the acting right now. we're in this story. And I think, and I honestly think it's at this moment where Scrooge is, to quote the Book of Acts, cut to the heart. I think this moment in the story is where Scrooge, if he were to have another line that wasn't, "Are you the spirit whose coming was foretold to me?" If that wasn't his next line, it would be, "Peter, what do we do?" But Charles Dickens wants us as the audience to seal, to encapsulate this image of Scrooge. And that's why he gives us the third ghost.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about the third ghost right now. We're talking about the second ghost, Ghost of Christmas Present, who has just convicted Scrooge with his own words. He has just held up a mirror to Scrooge, and he is using that mirror to point out Scrooge's flaws. Not only
just like Jesus.
Oh, not only in his attitude, but his heart.
Wow.
Which is where, well, that's where attitude stems from, let's be honest. And this Jesus, we like to think of Jesus as a jovial character, hanging out with the sinners, which he does all the time.
Yeah.
Just like the Ghost of Christmas Present does.
Yes.
He's hanging out with Scrooge.
Yes.
What are you going to do?
He's with the with real people.
Yes. Yeah, with a common man.
Yes.
Yes. And Jesus knew who to rebuke. And he knew who to point to and say, "Blind guides, blind fools, how dare you?" And I just specifically, because I think it applies so much to Scrooge, I want to look at Luke 11,
okay,
37 through 41. Now, as he spoke, a Pharisee invited Jesus to have a meal with him. So he went in and he took his place at the table. The Pharisee was astonished when he saw that Jesus did not first wash his hands before the meal.
Mm.
But the Lord said to him, "Now, you Pharisees, you clean the outside of the cup and plate, but inside you are full of greed and wickedness. You fools, did not the one who made the outside make the inside as well? But give from your heart to those in need, and then everything will be clean for you. Ebenezer, you clean the outside of your cup by storing up riches, by having a nice profitable business. That's how you clean your cup. But inside, I would even call him a whitewashed tomb." Hmm. Would you call him that, Michael?
Yeah.
would you call him that?
Yes.
I would. Nice and pretty on the outside, but inside
full of dead man's bones.
Yes. Oh, man. Oh, I'm getting worked up. Okay. Bring it down, Brendan. Bring it down.
Oh, Brendan.
Ebenezer, this is what you're doing, and you're a fool for doing so. Focus on giving to those who need it. And if you want a good starting spot, Mr. Ebenezer Scrooge, you start with the person who works for you. You start with him.
Oh, Brendan.
That's really all I want to point out.
We're out of time. Can you afford me 10 more minutes?
Five.
Okay.
We got to push it, man.
Do a word search for widows and orphans in the Bible, Brendan. Oh. Goes all the way back to Exodus. But let's go to Deuteronomy 24:19. "Whenever you reap your harvest in your field and leave some unraked grain there, you must not return to get it. It should go to the resident foreigner, orphan, and widow, so that the Lord your God may bless all the work that you do." Continuing on, "The remaining olives, don't go back and get those. Don't beat the trees a second time. They belong to the resident foreigner, orphan, and widow." Continuing on, verse 21, "They should go to the resident foreigner, orphan, and widow." We know this as the law of gleanings.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. "Cursed is the one who perverts justice for the resident foreigner, the orphan, and the widow." That's in chapter 27. Job, we could talk about in Job, but Isaiah, "Learn to do what is right, Israel. Promote justice. Give the oppressed reason to celebrate. Take up the cause of the orphan. Defend the rights of the widows. Your officials are rebels. They associate with thieves. All of them love bribery. robbery and look for payoffs. They do not take up the cause of the orphan and the widows and continuing on. We have it in Ezekiel. We have it in Zechariah. Now, my big point that I needed to make is actually in going back to Matthew chapter 25. Here you go. After separating the righteous and the unrighteous and saying to the righteous, here is the reason why you are righteous. And to the unrighteous, here is the reason why you are unrighteous. And they will reply, Lord, when did we ever see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and not help you? I don't recall ever seeing you in any of these situations, Lord. How can you condemn me? Then he will answer, I tell you the truth. When you refused to help the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you were refusing to help me. But then we'll say, surely, well, who is the Lord's brother and sister? Obviously, it's those that are doing, you know, A, B, and C. Matthew 12, verse 50. Anyone who does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. What is the will of the Father in heaven? Jesus said in the upper room, I give you a new commandment.
Oh.
Okay. How about this? Teacher, what is the greatest commandment? I've done all these other things. You shall love the Lord, your God, with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. And the second is like unto it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Well, who is my neighbor? It's obviously the person sitting in the pew next to me. The Samaritan, the good Samaritan. A hated person, a hated race of human being the brother to the wounded man. It's written all over the Bible.
All over. Lord, what do I got to do to get into heaven? Go sell all your stuff, give it to the poor, and then follow me. Yeah. Ah, darn it, I can't do that.
Not going to be able to do that. It's business. This is a beautiful story to... Now, Brendan and I just jumped off on a big old tangent because we aren't...
What a bunch of hippie dippy baloney.
But we stand side by side with giants. Or we stand on the shoulders of giants.
There you go.
Okay. In order to have an understanding of what is in God's heart, come in and know me better, man. That's the key verse.
See, and that's the invitation. And I'm sure if we were in a service right now, we would say, if you feel the need to respond.
Yes, come forward as we now stand and sing.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, Brendan, I think that we gave people enough to if people aren't busting down the doors with some feedback on this to tell us where we are just way off base.
Woo.
How did we miss the mark and shame on our parents? Let's skip that voicemail. Let's do the email that we got.
Okay.
We did. We got an email this past week from our buddy Fletch over there at Homeschooling in Real Life.
At the Mango Times.
Yes. What does that say, Brendan?
How do I use films to share Christ? I like to find a theme and then apply the questions to my coworkers. Here are a few examples. Watching Stranger Than Fiction. For non-followers of Christ, the question was real simple. Do you think we have an author who writes the story of our life? For those who are walking with Christ, the question became, do you think you have control of your story, or does the author?
Oh!
And parenthetical, yes, I am a sneaky Calvinist. Watching Les Mis, and you're a good man for it.
Yes.
When you think of American church today, would you say Christians today tend toward behavior similar to Jean Valjean or Javert?
Hey, and that fits in perfectly with what we just talked about today.
Exactly.
And we did an episode on Les Mis, so go look for that on the Finding Christ in Cinema website.
Watching The Truman Show. Ah, there it is again.
Yeah.
Similar to Stranger Than Fiction, I would ask about a hidden director planning out our life. And then, can we ever break out of our role? How would you live if you knew everything was being watched and recorded? Keep up the good work. If he were alive today, Paul would be in the middle of our culture asking the questions to make people think. The middle of our culture is Hollywood and the film entertainment industry. Keep asking questions.
Just as we discussed in Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 14.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which, by the way, a tradition we did not continue with this episode.
Well, we'll get it on the next one.
With the sevens. No, we got to do It's a Wonderful sorry.
Are we doing that next?
We might as well say it. We're okay. Doing It's a Wonderful Life next
week. He let the cat out of the bag. Spoiler alert. All right. Let's skip lightning round. We'll do that next. We got to get Brendan out of here. He's got to get to play practice rehearsal tonight. So next week, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
Amen.
It is.
So listen up, listeners. What Christian themes did you find in this adaptation of A Christmas Carol? The Patrick Stewart 1999 TNT/Hallmark Presents Special.
Hey, it was a good production.
Hey, excellent. And again, did we fall off the turnip truck? Did we just completely miss it? Are we telling lies? Are we misrepresenting the Lord? We need to know those things.
Are we telling a bunch of
humbug? Or is it just nothing but
a bunch of hippy dippy baloney?
And, you know, as we're wont to do,
babbling, bumbling band of baboons.
Hey, Finding Christ in Cinema is part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, using new media and social networking to equip and encourage you to go into all the world and proclaim the good news to everyone. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. For all things Finding Christ in Cinema, including Brendan's Monday movie review. What movie did you mention earlier? You pointed people to the article, but you didn't. Oh, Fury. You can read his article on Fury over there. All the other things, the links to all of our social networking and all that good stuff, ChristInCinema.com. Do you want to send us an email? Do that. Point it to FCC@GCTNetwork.com.
Call us up on the voice line at 507-407-GCTN. And for those without letters on their phones, that's 507-407-4286. Now, let's say you're eating falafel for the first time.
Love duct tape.
And you're using it to hold duct tape.
Well, I don't like falafel.
You can listen to us on iTunes, listen to us on Stitcher, and listen to us at TuneIn Radio. Just search the stores. Not for hippy dippy baloney.
Double decker couch.
But for Finding Christ in Cinema.
And for all the shows that we produce here on the Great Commission Transmission Network, including the Theonauts, where they provide
well-mannered frivolity.
Get over to the official website at gctnetwork.com. Brendan Taylor, anything else?
You know, I actually had falafel for the first time. It's not that bad.
It's not only that, but it is excellent.
Inconceivable.
I don't understand.
And that is a wrap.
Come on, stop trying to hit me and hit me.
You know I hate comedians.
Sad, strange little man.
Have you ever heard of Plato, Aristotle, Socrates?
Yes. I'm a miracle.
There's no such thing as magic.
We've got to get a better restraint on Uncle Darcy. He keeps busting out.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission. This is your Great Commission transmission.
At gctnetwork.com.
This is your Great Commission transmission.